There was a nursery rhyme. A wise old owl lived in an oak. The more he saw, the less he spoke. The less he spoke, the more he heard. Why can't we all be like that wise old bird? Beautiful, isn't it? The more you see life and living, the transient nature of experiences, the less you speak about your own story and your drama. The less he spoke, the more he heard. The deeper meaning is the silence. The less he spoke, the more he heard. The absence of the thinking mind, which, when absent, leaves silence. I think it was, I'm not sure if it was Ramana Maharshi or I don't know which sage said, we are so involved with life that we interfere in other people's affairs as well, forget our own, and that needs to stop. There was somebody I met who read I Am That, deeply impressed her. She was not exposed to the subject of Advaita, non-duality, none of this conditioning was there. Not even a conscious seeker. And she was gifted I Am That and she read it. And she said that one thing which she got from that book, which became her mantra in life, not my circus, not my monkeys. Not my circus, not my monkeys. So that involvement, getting drawn and sucked into situations, views, opinions, judgments, events, dropped away. Such a practical takeaway from the book. It is God's circus and God's monkeys, not mine. You see, that is when the teaching impacts daily living. A realization happens which was not there before. Then you know it is not an intellectual absorption of knowledge. What is the difference between consciousness, absolute, what is prior to consciousness? That's all very well to understand the terms, usages, etc. But daily living comes down to that. We received an email, someone who wanted to attend the satsang and asked, what is the meditation practice which Gautam teaches? Because my guru's meditation practice is beyond all practices. Where is the humility? Where is the humility? My way is the best way. Maybe for you, but may not be for others. That is why they say the spiritual ego is even more dangerous than a regular normal ego. This is precisely the reason. It thinks it is superior. I remember in one of Ganesan's books, I think it was a small book he had gifted us, he said he wanted to give Nisargadatta Maharaj something. And Maharaj said, whatever you give, I will not take money from you. Please don't give me money. Because after all, you are from the Ramana Maharshi lineage. Money I will not take. And Ganesan said, two instances, I've forgotten the details. The first, out of sheer gratitude, he I think gave some gift and put an envelope of money with about 50 or 100 rupees at that time in the 80s, and it was kept aside. Of course, Maharaj didn't open it. It was all kept aside. And before leaving, Maharaj stopped him and said, I have something for you, and gave another envelope. And when Ganesan left the satsang, opened it, it was the exact same amount he had put in the envelope. That simplicity, that humility in action reveals a lot for anyone. Today is Ram Navami, the birth of Lord Ram, avatar of Vishnu. Seventh, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Vishnu is, we are here because of Vishnu, the sustainer, he who pervades consciousness. Morning papers, I was reading Ram Navami, And a beautiful story came to mind. I think I must have mentioned it already in a talk of Vivekananda. And we all know how poverty-stricken Vivekananda was, and his own guru, Ramakrishna, would cry and say, "Why are you torturing my devotee like this?" He would appeal to the Lord, to Kali. So Vivekananda was going in a train, extremely hungry. And one upper caste Brahmin was in the same compartment. Pulled out this big tiffin, spread it around, saw Vivekananda staring at the food with a deep longing to put a morsel in his mouth, and refused to give him any food, and kept chomping and slurping away and enjoying his tiffin. Then the train stopped at a station. The Brahmin got out, Vivekananda got out. The Brahmin went to wash his hands, and Vivekananda just got out and was leaning against the post on the platform, exhausted. And one man came running, "Maharaj, Maharaj, Maharaj, I've come for you." Vivekananda looked around, and there was no Maharaj. Perhaps the Brahmin was a Maharaj. And this man, I think, had an assistant. He said, "Sit down, Maharaj." Pulled out a sheet, put it on the platform, and then pulled out dishes after dishes after dishes and spread it out there. Forced Vivekananda to sit down and start eating. And he said, "Sir, you made a mistake. I don't know you. I am no Maharaj. So you must be looking for someone else." He said, "Doesn't matter, you eat first." And so Vivekananda ate. Then he told Vivekananda, he said, "Something very peculiar happened last night." He said, "I had a dream and Lord Ram came to me in the dream. I've never dreamt of Lord Ram ever. And in the dream, he showed me what you look like, the station you would get off at, the way you would be leaning on a pole. And Lord Ram said, my child will be coming at so and so time, so and so place. You must go and feed him. That's why I'm here." These things happen. So how are you, Suresh? Are you comfortable in Bombay? Your flight was comfortable. You're
Yes.
staying close by, I believe.
Yes, at the end of the land.
Oh, near the beach?
So
First time in Bombay?
yes.
Is it a bit overwhelming for you? Or is it okay?
It's okay.
Anything to share?
Okay.
It's okay. Yes, Khushbu. How are you doing? Would you like to ask anything or share anything? After our last discussion, was there any difference in perspective or understanding? Did it help in any way or did it create confusion?
No, it did help, but I just came up with more questions.
Yeah, because there is no end to questions. You see, but that must be accompanied by one thing, whether the acceptance of God's will has happened, because there's no point suppressing questions. But when you accept things are the way they are, people are the way they are, events happen the way they are meant to happen, that's when the questions dissolve. You realize that the mind cannot really continue on this journey of cause-effect relationships, rationalizing, analyzing, because it is an endless activity. So when you accept this play of life in which you have been placed, then the questions drop away. But if that acceptance is not there, and there is still a conflict, a struggle, then that needs to be looked at. Now, end of questions could also mean a lot of frustration because I'm not getting my answers, you see, which actually means I'm not getting answers, I'm expecting to hear. That's what it means. So, by and by, when you see that things unfold, the way they are meant to. You are less involved in situations. You say what you have to, you do what you have to by all means, but thereafter you leave it to God's will. So that is when the mind, because questions are raised by the thinking mind, not by the vacant mind. So that is when the mind starts resting more and more, because this churn is not happening like it used to. The result is you are more at peace, which you will know. Siddhant, right? You've been here before?
Yeah.
I saw you in Goa, I remember. You have come here. You were in Pune. Oh, you've come to Bombay, that's right. I don't know, did you mention he's in Bombay? All well? I remember on the subject of Ram, since I lost my father when I was young, I don't know if this scene still happens, but if you see a body being taken to the funeral ground, usually the chant at that time used to be Ram Naam Satya Hai. They would chant Ram Naam Satya, and it would creep me out, you know, because there was fear, because I associated that chant with death. Ram Naam Satya Hai, Ram Naam Satya Hai. And surely the people chanting it didn't know what they were chanting, doing it as a ritual. Until when I was with Ram Bhosle, whom I have spoken about before, at that time he was ailing. He was a massage. He had a technique of massage which he had learned from a sage in the Himalayas called Samahan. So I said, Baba, what is the one thing you'd like to say? I met him a few times with two friends. One was Shirish, one was Shankar, who's a mantra expert. He said, God exists between the Ra and the Ma of Ram. And it means many multiple deep things. Ra as Ra the sun, Ma as the moon. Then the between the in-breath and the out-breath. Very deep meaning. So, you know, Ram, 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 the Japa. There's such a deep science in this tradition we have, which we are not aware of. It's quite fascinating. His guru was Babaji, Mahavatar Babaji. I asked him, I said, have you seen Babaji in Bombay? He said, yes, once. And Babaji's sister, he said, yes, even she has been here once. This is a long email I received. I tend not to answer long emails because it takes up too much time. But it's so sad what this girl is going through. So I was thinking, can I read out just parts of it? But then it makes the story incomplete to understand where the person is coming from. So I'm going to read this out because there are aspects here, I think, which would touch everyone. I am an introvert by nature, and I've found it difficult to form social relationships and friendships just for the sake of it. Since childhood, my parents were very strict with me as well as very cautious for me. Hence, they never let me be too much connected with people that they didn't know. Also, they wanted me to focus on studies. Hence, they did not let me connect with my classmates or friends in my locality beyond school hours. This lifestyle and upbringing made me more averse of being among people, and I loved spending time in my own company. I became rigid in my comfort zone and found difficulty in adjusting to new surroundings or people. One strong characteristic I always had because I was an introvert was I was never vocal about my discomfort or my likes and dislikes towards anyone. I had the ability to keep my opinions and discomfort within myself and act normal and carry an image of getting along with everything and everyone. I never raised my voice or my choice whenever any decision had to be made for my life or my time. I was always available to my family and the few relationships I made. Having strict parents also made it important for me to please others since childhood. I loved the feeling of them being happy with me or proud of me when I did well in school and when socially everyone praised how well-mannered and a responsible child I am. I carried this people-pleasing behavior and hiding my true self to be appreciated and approved by everyone around me until I started becoming dead emotionally. When I had to keep doing the same thing in my marriage too, I realized that I will keep doing this till I die because I wanted to be good and accepted everywhere. I was troubled by my in-laws and husband for a child and couldn't get myself to do this for anyone else's sake as I was not ready for it. I knew my mental state. I was not myself in the marriage. I felt alone in that family. I never had any friends to talk about my difficulties, and I never had the habit of sharing any problem in my life with my parents. Hence, I was suffering in silence till the point I became dead from inside and lived every day like a robot. I became depressed. My husband and in-laws started avoiding me and talking about me behind my back. I almost became suicidal once I couldn't gather the courage to talk to or confront anyone. But I held on to that one spark of not giving up on life too soon. I left the marriage and came back to my parents' home in Pune. But once back, I realized how much the way I was brought up and taught to behave caused me this misery in life where I couldn't stand up for myself even when my in-laws and husband used to shout and howl at me. I couldn't raise a word to even tell them to shut up, because I was so taken aback in shock that these people hated me so much for some decision I took for my life of not having a child at this point in my marriage. I realized that though I did not have the qualities of being confrontational or confiding in people, I also lacked the ability to stand up for myself. Even then, my morals of not being disrespectful to anyone, or rather forced morals, made me face everything without any retaliation. I had a lot of difficulty making my parents understand how much they also contributed in all of this, but they were just blank and saw me as being an emotionally disturbed person. But my adjusting nature and forgiving capacity all have gone for a toss. I don't let my parents get away with even a sly comment now, which is done without considering my emotions or my choices. I have had enough arguments and confrontations with them over the last 2 years I have been with them. And now I am finally tired of letting all my pain out in the open. Hence, I don't argue or get irritated very easily anymore. Now, when I focus on myself, I find I am disinterested in life. I have quit my job when I left my marriage and have not taken up anything since then. I am not in the right mindset of devoting my time somewhere else other than myself. Hence, taking up a job would be cheating the company since I wouldn't give it my best. Working only for money is something I have never been able to do. My head and heart should be there, or at least one of the two. I am becoming spiritually inclined in this difficult time since I have received a lot of solace from various books and talks. My request to you, I am extremely lost in life right now and don't know the way forward. I have met with psychologists and life coaches, but nothing seems to be the solution for me. And my difficulties in adjusting with people and being around them is increasing more and more with every passing day. I hardly have my family members and one special friend I have always valued in my life, but I keep arguing and fighting with them. I keep seeing faults in them, and they only see me in bad light now as I voice my opinions and likes very bluntly every time. They think I have changed, but I know I have just come out of my fake shell, possibly in the wrong way. But I want to do this right. I feel my tolerance towards people has drastically reduced, and now I myself like being distant and unavailable for any casual relationship and talks, even with family members. I don't talk or meet with anyone outside my family, and I'm inclined more towards spirituality as I feel that brings me more peace and understanding and acceptance of myself and others. I won't read the rest, but one unfortunate thing has happened. Because a natural outcome of absorbing the understanding is that you start accepting people more and more. Tolerance also increases because you accept they are the way God made them. In fact, you find the whole dynamic of relationships changes when you accept someone for who they are, especially the people you don't like. Your entire being communicates that acceptance without using words. But if you find the opposite is happening, then you are not accepting people the way God has made them. Whereas this teaching says that even the way your parents treated you was based on their conditioning and destiny, the way their parents treated them. So while in the cause-effect dynamic, you could say that because they were strict with me, I grew up like this. But deep down, you know, that was your destiny. Otherwise, it would not have happened. You were destined to have such parents. As a baby, as a child, you can't control your parents, can you? It was your destiny, as it was their destiny. Now, one may disengage from dramas based on family relationships, past conditionings, and so on. You don't want to play that game anymore. That may happen. You may step aside and say, okay, now I really want to live a life of peace. Certain relationships in the family don't suit me. Maybe. But that will not be accompanied by this feeling of dislike for them. So in your heart, you will know what feelings arise. Because you see, the other downside of this, which my teacher would mention, stopping work, not engaging, then again the spotlight becomes the ego. Whereas when you're involved in something, your mind is not on yourself. Your mind is involved in whether it is your work, whether it is social service, whether it is doing something for someone. The spotlight has shifted from the me. So this is another misconception that I must look at myself. I must not work, I won't do justice to the work, I must not do this, I must not do that, I must not meet my friends, I don't like them, I must not meet my family. The me, the me, the me, the me is becoming encrusted with very hard cement. Yes, one can understand when one is on a particular spiritual journey, you don't want to be as social as you were before because you find it's a waste of time. Like my mother was just telling me yesterday how in her younger days, she got bored when she would sit with the wives of all the husbands and they were only discussing which holidays they had gone on and who wore which diamond ring. So she then excused herself and they thought something was wrong with her. Why is she being a snob? So yes, when you're on the spiritual journey, you're pretty clear that what kind of conversation engages you, what kind of movies you'd like to see, not like to see, and you draw those lines. But there's no resentment or dislike aimed at people. They are like this. I'm not like this. You accept it. Okay, you may feel that your work is taking up too much of your time, of your consciousness, but you still need to earn money. So you decide, let me change my job, let me earn less, but let me have a balance in life where I'm not struggling to earn in order to eat or not a burden on anyone else. I sort that out and have my downtime for myself. So with a rational, balanced mind, you approach life. But when you resist and you escape, you are imprisoning yourself more and more. That is what happens. You think you're going out of the prison, but you're going back in. So these are the pitfalls everyone has to be careful about. How can you shut away the world unless you go and live in a cave and do tapasya there and be on yourself? It's fine. But if you're going to live in society with family, with friends, with in-laws, whatever it may be, you can't shut all those doors. You are the one who's suffering. So what I liked about this letter was there was so much humility also, that in the end she is saying that perhaps it's gone the wrong way. That awareness is also there. But harmonious relationships really are key to knowing where you stand in relation to yourself. It's a bit cold. Is the AC's remote control somewhere nearby? Can you raise the temperature to about 26 maybe? Sure. Sorry, before that, something funny came to mind. In our school group, there are these two guys who just don't get along with each other. Whenever we meet, you know, we are expecting some fireworks. So then I met one of them separately and we were chatting about the other guy. He said, "Gautam, I've come to one conclusion. Our horoscopes don't match." I said, "That's it." That's it. So stay away from that. But accept that he is who he is. You are who you are. So simple. Then where's the room to hate, to judge? That doesn't happen. Yeah.
So when we speak of Rinaru Bandhan, that's like a former relationship. As you mentioned, a cosmic debt of a former relationship. Having heard Rameshji and read his books, what I understand is that there is no me. This entire thing is an illusion and all there is consciousness. So whose relationship with who?
But Rameshji never said there is no me. There is, in fact, his whole teaching was talking to the me, to the ego. That is why he said that I am that, Maharaj's book. He would have changed the title to that is you, me, he and she. That is all of us. Of course, I told him that title, nobody would buy that book. But his point was that there is the me which has to operate in daily living. And because you see, if this is all an illusion, it includes the one saying this is all an illusion. You can't be out of it and say this is an illusion. You are in it.
There's no continuity as such. So whose relationship with whom is continuing?
Could you explain that?
As in, he has given enough instances to say that there is no rebirth. When once the person is gone, there is
sure.
a new, and I have a deep understanding of that.
Sure.
So then I come across something like in the Sai Sat Charita, it's mentioned that I have known you for your past births. You know, you were a goat and then you were a
sure.
snake and then you were born in a Brahmin family. So who is born when there is no person, if you know what I mean?
Yes, I know what you mean. But let's get back to your question first about Rinanu Bandhan, because I'm more concerned with what the questioner is asking. What is the point you want to ask about Rinanu Bandhan?
Okay, so there is a me, but what is continuing exactly? Because there is no same person continuing. It's a new body, mind, organism altogether.
Yes.
So Rinanu Bandhan of whom with whom?
Yes. Now let's explore this in different ways. Okay. First of all, please don't cross-pollinate. What I mean by that is, when you look at Rinanu Bandhan from the concept of previous births, okay, where there is the vasanas and sanskaras which carry on from birth to birth. So while the ego dissolves with the body, at death the ego dissolves, the bundle of vasanas and sanskaras continues because those are unresolved. So it comes down to what is the definition of the ego as far as rebirth is concerned. If you define the bundle of vasanas and sanskaras as the individual ego, that does take rebirth. But if your understanding is that the ego dissolves with the body, then it is not the ego that takes rebirth. Now, there are two schools of thought about this, but that is not the point. The point is that an unresolved sanskar takes rebirth till it is resolved. This is where Nanubandhan comes in. This is where the cause-effect principle in relationships comes in. So, for example, if you and me have a very disturbed relationship where we blame and fight all the time, accusing each other of things, this pocket, if it is unresolved, is going to continue. You see? The bandhan, the bondage of this conflict, because it is unresolved, is going to continue till it resolves. And that is why the masters, whether it is Ramana Maharshi, Sai Baba himself, what do they all say? What do they all say about relationships? Sai Baba himself has spoken about the dog, and he said, you didn't give food to the dog, that was me. Because what is your relationship with the dog? So Rinanubandhan, which is the cosmic debt of prior relationships, which is the reason why you'll find in life certain people come to you, certain people don't. Why is that? Because of Rinanubandhan. But this question is asking what? Ultimately, all relationships are your relationship with yourself. And that is why I said in reference to this girl, you can't shut out everyone from your life and escape. Because each relationship reflects your relationship with yourself. In that sense, who's Rinanubandhan? In that sense, who's Rinanubandhan? But do you realize that? When you are at work, when you are with your family, when you are with your friends, do you realize that at that time? When you accept no one is the doer of their actions, the bandhan is finished. You are no longer imprisoning people. When you accept we are all instruments of God, the bandhan is finished. The rin is also finished. Now you can tell me who's Rinanubandhan. That is precisely the point. Are you living your life like that? Because if you are, that means your relationship is no longer with individuals, it is with God. If I don't point fingers at any individual and I accept they are instruments of God the way God made them, including myself, my relationship is with God. Then who's Rinanubandhan? Then the game is up. So is one operating from that space? Now, for example, and I mentioned this a couple of times before, when I worked on the last book with Ramesh before he passed away, and I asked him, what would you like me to mention in the acknowledgements? And he said, after 35 books, I don't want to thank anyone. After all, who is to thank whom and for what? Which is why? We are all instruments. Consciousness is going to thank consciousness for what? I don't want to thank individuals anymore. By now, after 35 books, it's okay. Yes, that realization is there. Is that realization there? Then we can say. But the Rinanubandhan is there. It's like a tennis match. You've seen when two people fight, when two lovers fight, or whatever it is. It's always conflicting views. Until one, as Eckhart says, has the awareness to just stand in presence, and then you realize that the other person is not hitting the ball back in your court and has put the racket down. And then you can't argue with the field of presence. But for that, it takes one of the two to be very aware. You see, it's most fascinating. If I clap now, the most attention, your attention is drawn to the sound. It rushes to the sound, so to speak. So, supposing you're not expecting it, you'll get a start. Your consciousness has gone to the sound. Now, supposing you have various aspects of conditioning and someone says something which really triggers you, you get upset. Your consciousness has rushed to that spot. It has left its center of presence and gone into this whole thing and got involved. For what? Because of Rinanubandhan. It has got absorbed in this, you told me this, how dare you, you've been treating me like this since the last 10 years of my life, since I was a child, blah, 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 blah. Because I blame that person has hit a soft spot, my consciousness has rushed there, and what have I created? Bondage. I've got mired in blame, condemnation, conflict, hatred, malice, and all these things. And so one keeps doing that. One keeps strengthening this bandhan because this is where the consciousness rushes based on prior conditioning. But when this teaching comes in and says, hey, look here, just accept people for the way they are, the way God created them, with all their flaws, like you have. You may have different flaws, they may have different flaws, but that's it. So what happens? Next time someone says something you don't like, you find that that force, that rush of reaction is no longer binding you, which is the bondage, which is the bandhan, like it was earlier. So that mechanism is getting dissolved. You're becoming free of all that in this life. That is what starts happening. So that is why it always boils down to relationships. Because you see, why did Ramana Maharshi, when he was asked what about one's relationship with others, his answer was, there are no others. Everyone posts that on social media, there are no others there. What does it mean? It means when you see this for what it means. That is why Joel Goldsmith says, give up the belief in two powers. Because if you believe someone can do something to you, it means that you believe there's a power apart from God. His whole teaching was based on this, give up the belief in two powers.
Can we say that the bandhan is more impersonal and organic than of a person? Like, it's not Khushbu's bandhan, but it is something which is just passed down from one body mind organism to another. There is
Yes, you
no.
could say that. You could say
Because it's not mine, because who am I? Like,
that.
and I have a very deep feeling of that, you know? So, whose bandhan? Like, I get the point that every relationship is something which was supposed to transpire in the long run, but whose relationship with whom? And what is continuing with whom?
That is very well said. As long as your relationships are harmonious, then it is most beautiful to have this understanding. You are quite right. And obviously, you've thought a lot about this. But if my general nature is to be, let's say, in this case, antagonistic to people, I will keep manifesting relationships where I'm antagonistic to people. That is what will happen. Because that is the story which you are perpetuating. Whereas, if my relationships give me peace, including the people I don't like, if I'm at peace with them, I'm at peace with myself, then the learning is complete. The learning is complete. Now, you are so young. From this point in life till 30 years later, you are going to encounter many relationships. The point is, with this understanding at such a young age, how is Khushbu going to navigate her boat through the journey of life as far as people are concerned? Whether it is at work, whether it is family, whether it is friends, this understanding can take you very far at a young age. But the awareness that, as Ramana Maharshi said, the state of equanimity is the state of bliss. If this journey of life, with the understanding, Khushbu finds that by and by, whatever people say, whatever people do, I find my peace is not disturbed. I find I don't get bothered that much. I am not as reactive as I used to be. Then I know that I'm free of this. But if I find that I'm going through life saying, whose bandhan, whose bandhan, and I yet get agitated, worked up, I fight with people, then. Now, I'll tell you, very recently I was at a place, and I mean, so much of dialogue and thought process is unnecessary, yet it happens. There was a boy who was obese. There was a shortage of tables. And so I was finishing my tea, and so he and his friend requested, and I said, you're welcome, I'm going. As soon as he left, a friend of mine came and said, "What were you doing with that guy, that fat guy, this, that?" All the time talking about this boy. And I thought to myself, the Maya can be so strong that once consciousness is entirely fixated on somebody who's not said a word to you, not done anything to you, who is precisely the way God has made him. We don't know what genetic disorders he has. And here, my friend's consciousness was completely absorbed by this. So, hypothetically, he could say, "Who's Bandhan?" But you see, this would not happen. This would not happen if one had the realization that, first of all, everyone is precisely the way God made them, especially people who are challenged physically. You can imagine how much harder it is for them to be humiliated all their life. So, where compassion should arise, the opposite has happened. But even that is God's will. So, there are no others in that sense. So, you are quite right. All relationships are one's relationship with oneself, and therefore, in that sense, the Rinanubandhan ends.
So coming back to like the situation, like the practical situation where supposedly you get triggered and all your consciousness goes there. But what I find in my case is just the understanding is not enough to make you completely free from it. Because you know that can happen again and then you get triggered again. Like I find that it takes a little bit more than that. Like it takes a little bit of like unraveling. Like you have to like look at the situation, sort of see where you're getting triggered and get clear there. And then maybe you'll be free from it forever or maybe not. So my question was, is the understanding enough or like does it take more than that? Like a little bit of like looking, you know, with awareness or whatever, making sure like identifying where the first trigger comes from, like going through that process and then coming to like complete clarity and untriggered sort of place.
Absolutely right. The effort is yours. The effort is yours. You see, because Siddhant, we are so hardwired with conditioning, as you rightly said, we can keep getting triggered. But what happens with the understanding? The involvement starts reducing. So I may get triggered 10 times on the same issue because that's where I come from. You see, that's my trigger point. So I will keep getting pressed. I'll keep reacting because I have years of conditioning to deal with and life's experiences I went through. But what happens is my involvement with what happened, what that person said or the event happened, that shrinks. Because earlier my thinking mind was just going completely bananas. But now I've accepted, thanks to the understanding, that this is precisely the way it was meant to be, including my reaction. I am no longer fighting with what happened and why did it happen. Now I am dealing with my reaction. So already it is half the battle won because when I have removed blame of others or myself for the reaction, my thinking mind, which is no longer engaged that much in the involvement, is more centered, still, stable. Now I'm working on it. I'm saying, why did this happen because of that? Why did I get triggered again? But when I know deep down that if it is God's will, then I won't get triggered at some point in time again. If not, so be it. All I can do is try. But at the end of the day, I am not holding an individual accountable for the happening, the other or myself. Because you see, the ego loves self-pity. I am not good enough. I should not get triggered. Why am I getting triggered? It means I'm weak in will. I should be so aware and so in control that if that same thing happens, I should not react. That is the ego, which thinks it is in control. But what is this journey about? By and by, awareness increases. I now am more aware of what triggers me, why it triggers me. That is the journey, the spiritual journey of awareness. So I no longer set goals that I should not be triggered. This should not happen. I don't judge myself. It's hard work. Because why? I never created the conditioning in the first place. Life gave me those experiences. Life could give you an abusive experience when you were young, suppose. You didn't choose it. So if you didn't choose it, how can you unravel that yourself? Let it be. Try as you may. Understand it. Let go of attachment to the experience that this is me. It is you because it happened to you. But when that is covered with all this blame, accusation, hatred, and so on, that creates a mess. And what this teaching comes and says that, hey, look here. This is the divine cosmic play which we are all a part of. Don't overanalyze it. Don't go down that road where your mind gets stuck in this mess of wires. It's not going to help. Just withdraw, witness, be at peace. You will find that you are more, become more and more at peace with what has happened. And you will find that your triggers may still be there, but you will not be invested in them so much. Because then that's again an endless road to self-perfection. It is perfect already as it is right now. So that grip the ego has, that also drops away.
But do you see that, like, even just having the understanding is like a subtle form of suppression of what you're feeling? So for example, I get like triggered in a situation and, you know, I feel something off, but I have the understanding, even if it's an intellectual understanding or it's an embodied understanding, but I still feel it. And I feel like just because I have the understanding, I'm sort of, you know, being more accepting and sort of allowing of the situation. So isn't that also like some sort of, you know, place to get entangled rather than just like looking at it clearly? Because to me, like every trigger is like just some sort of unresolved conflict that happened at one point of time,
sure,
which is not clearly looked at. So if you like look at it, it can like resolve forever. So my point being, like, how does one completely get free of it?
Of the trigger?
Of
the reaction?
Of the trigger in any situation. So like, is the approach of like looking at it clearly much better long term, or like just having an understanding?
Firstly, it may appear to be a play of words, but you don't have the understanding. It is the understanding that has you. In what sense? Let's take it as simply as this, that one day you finally hear that everyone is the way God has made. And you didn't think of this earlier. And this appeals to you. My God, there's some sense in this. You feel like, you know, I didn't look at it this way, but maybe this is really the truth. The understanding has you. You see what has happened. But now you feel, how can I use this understanding to make myself better? That's the ego coming in. Now, what could happen is someone could completely reject this concept and say, I don't agree with you. I don't agree with this nonsense that nobody is the doer of their actions. I don't agree that we are all instruments based on genetics conditioning. And they reject the concept. But if something has appealed to you and it makes sense, the understanding has you. As Ramana would say, your head is in the tiger's mouth. Now the ego is trying to find its way out. That is what is happening because it doesn't want to lose its grip. It's realized my head is in the tiger's mouth. So now it's questioning this understanding. Is the understanding enough? Should I not rationalize my way out of it? Should not I put in effort? Of course you should. Even the Buddhists will tell you that. Even Ramesh would talk about this process of self-investigation, he would say. The effort is yours. Maharaj would say the earnestness is your effort. But the obsession with that, you see, very important point, that because the ego will not let go of that. That is the obsession, the game the ego plays. Whereas truly, it's two sides of the same coin. The understanding is all there is. The individual puts in the effort, knowing that the results are not in my control. And then what happens is the stage of witnessing happens more and more. So even if you are getting triggered, witnessing that you are getting triggered is happening more and more. And that's all there is to it. That's all there is to it. That obsession with all this starts dropping away. Because it's perpetuating a story which was not there in deep sleep.
Yeah, because I mean, when you look at children, they don't have triggers, right? Like they're pretty much free
Yes.
from triggers. That's
Yeah,
because
yeah.
they don't have those unresolved conflicts in their mind. So to me, it appears that yes, the understanding plays a big role in like sort of taking you on the other side. But just witnessing your trigger, like when in your quiet time, not when you're getting triggered, but like when you're like outside the trigger, like maybe at home when you're just chilling out or whatever, seems to like change the situation forever. If you really let your bit.
And that is the understanding in operation. Even that, witnessing it is the understanding in operation. Understanding in action is witnessing. It's the same thing. Otherwise, why would you sit later and contemplate on it? It is the understanding that is making you contemplate on it. It's already in action. But you see, so much happens in life in a day that if we keep sitting, understanding, contemplating, kyun hua, kaise hua, why did I react like that? I'm going to reach the end of my life with all this only going on. You won't live. But when you accept, all right, it happened. I'm trying to understand it for sure. I'm trying my best, but now it's not in my control. Whatever little understanding has come has given me a modicum of peace compared to earlier, let's say, or acceptance. And by, let me move on in life, in life's journey.
Like a healthy balance between the two would like be a right approach, because even Ramana and the great sages talk about like inquiring and like getting into not just self-inquiry, but like inquiring into whatever happens.
Yeah.
It seems like you have to do the inquiry at some point anyways, but you also have to live and be.
So yes.
Balance between the two.
Yeah.
Whatever feels like.
The middle path.
Middle path.
I'm a firm proponent of the middle path.
Yeah, because if you go one way, it can like sort of lead you and make you very heady. But if you go the other way, it can also make you miss what needs to be looked at.
Yes, and that's the swing of the pendulum of the polaric opposites. You're still going to be sitting on the pendulum on one side, is going to swing to the next till it comes of its own and reaches a balance, which is the middle. So a bit of this and a bit of that, not an over obsession with one aspect at the expense of another.
It's really difficult to do.
It is, yeah, for the ego.
Right. Because if you want to change something, you obsess about it. And then,
yes.
But you, yeah, it can sort of lead you in very extreme situations.
But at the same time, it can be very liberating when you allow the understanding, not your understanding, the understanding, to do its job.
That can't be done, right?
It can only happen. But my feeling is, and as my teacher would say, that if one has already come so far in trying to understand life, what it is about, one's reactions, then why do you feel God will drop you here? Not everyone reaches this level of thinking about life, understanding, trying to make sense of it. Where did that come from? That is also grace. So why not give that a chance? That same force which took care of the baby Siddhant without the baby doing anything, that same force which brought the mother giving milk, has not gone away. It took care. It's taking care. In the way it knows best, right here, right now. When you are sleeping, it's taking care of you. That is why it is taken too lightly when masters say, leave your troubles at my feet. What they mean is, leave it at the feet of the source. Yeah, all right, I can't do this anymore. I'm leaving them down there. You help.
Does that come with practice though? Like, is it like a muscle memory sort of a thing to surrender? Because I forget, I'll be honest.
No, the ego is like that. You're absolutely right. Absolutely.
Like, I forget to surrender.
Sure.
In your experience, did it come with like practice, years of, you know, being on the path, or it just happened?
In my experience, I think it just happened because when I realized that very little was in my control early on in life, starting with my father passing away when I was 14. And then when I was almost 30, I met my teacher and he said that very little is in your control, so you have to surrender to life. It made so much sense because it was my personal experience, you see. So I didn't have to go through this process of working hard to surrender. You know, like even if you take a small thing, a small event, insignificant, let's say you're at a cafe, right, and you order something and then the guy says, oh, we don't have it today, right? Surrender can come then. All right, let me look. I would have loved to have it. What next is on the menu? But how can you not have this on your menu? Aren't you supposed to be a restaurant of repute? Why isn't this on your menu? Blah, 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 blah. Who is suffering? So what happens with this understanding is you surrender to life more and more. You know, it's not a doing on your part. See, when you accept, I asked for a cappuccino and the cappuccino making machine is not functioning. Obviously, I preferred a cappuccino. That's why I asked for it. But I switch and have a chai, right? Because I've surrendered to the fact that although the wish was there for cappuccino, I'm not going to get it. Surrender. Accepting what life brings. So, I mean, I'm not trying to trivialize the point you're making about surrender, but what I'm saying is surrender means when the mind is not operating too much. Hands up is that only, above the mind. That's where that symbology came from. I surrender is above the mind. So when, you know, by and by you find you're accepting things, small or big, people, then doing what you think you should do by all means. You know, you're not going to just sit like a vegetable. I forgot the clock. What is the time?
12.
I have to get a new clock. For someone who's quiet, I can speak a lot. You are here till when, Suresh? Oh, I thought you were here for a week. I think you mentioned just for a few days.
Yes.
So if you'd like to come tomorrow evening, you're welcome.